Okay, this is the PNI Institute call for Wednesday, November 14th, 2018. And our topic today is PNI in community building and maintenance. And the first thing we're going to do is go around and very quickly say who we are, and then we'll get started talking about the topic. So I'm Cynthia Kurtz. And I work in the area of participatory narrative inquiry, and I'm a consultant and a researcher there.
My name is Jerry Talley. I'm an OD consultant out in California. I am probably the neophyte in the group, just flirting with using PNI and some of the projects I have here, and one that I might talk about today around helping communities start to address climate change.
I'm Murray McGregor in Ottawa, Canada, and I'm a performance storyteller, and I joined the group because it gives me a whole new perspective on the use of story in society.
Mark, I think you're muted.
I'm Mark Anderson. I'm interested in the PNI for the use of doing evaluation work with it, and just kind of listening in on the talk today.
Okay, my name is Harold Vergarderen. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm on the other side of the ocean than the rest of them. And we do a lot of projects in PNI, in government, education, and also commercial.
Okay, so community building. So to get ready for this call, I actually was attempting to write a blog post that we could then read and talk about, but I didn't finish the post, so all I have is a bunch of notes. And I'll just tell you what I was going to write, and then we can talk about that. And as I was looking around to see about what people say about this and just sort of seeing what's up in the discussions about the topic lately, I thought that, you know, it's often useful to have a kind of a scaffold for our discussion, or some kind of a framework or something to talk about. And so I think that as I was reading things, I feel like things that people talk about that matter, that are worth doing, kind of fall into four categories. And you know what I'll do is I'll type them in the chat so that we can see them. Find the chat. Okay. And they are, I see you, I know you, I need you, and let's do this. So what I mean by that, let me just explain what I mean by each one of those, and then we can talk about it. I see you, to me, is like the beginning, which is that I see things through your eyes. I understand your point of view. It doesn't mean I necessarily agree with you, but I kind of get you. I kind of understand where you're coming from. And I feel like, well, for a lot of people today, this is the part we're missing the most, is that we're not very as aware of each other's experiences then as we used to be. So that's kind of like reducing stereotypes, getting to understand each other, reducing the number of erroneous assumptions we make about each other. Then I know you is about, it's not about being aware of each other, it's about being related to each other. Like, I know you in the sense of that you're part of something that I'm part of. I'm connected. And this feeling of connectedness of community, that we're in the same family or town or situation or something, that there's this connective tissue between us, that you're not, yes, you may be a stranger to me, but you're a stranger within the framework of we are connected in some way. And then the third one is I need you, which has to do with more like crisis and resilience. And when a community has a sense of needing each other in the sense that they stand up for each other, when there is a crisis, they pull together. And when you don't have that sense of interdependence, that's what I mean, interdependence, then when there's a crisis, you don't pull together, you pull further apart. So that's kind of a goal. And, you know, we could talk about how PNI can be used for those things. But before we talk about that, I wanted you to just, like, look at these categories and see if we can improve on them. And then the last one is let's do this, which is more of a forward-thinking thing. It's not about crisis. It's not about connectedness or awareness. It's about problems and solutions and collaboration. So if I was to go back over these and say, what is the dominant thing? The first one is awareness, then connectedness, then resilience, and then, let's call it collaboration. So these are kind of like the threads I see going in community building, and I thought it would be interesting to talk about how PNI can be used for connects to each one of these things. So to start out, what does anybody have to say about these four categories? Have you seen this? Is there anything you'd like to add to it or change?
I want to raise one issue. I like the list. And I'm thinking of it in terms of a project that we are starting here in Palo Alto. Mm-hmm. It's around getting community groups, to people from the same community together to think about climate change. And all four of these issues are relevant, but there's a fourth one that I want to stick in between resilience and collaboration.
Okay.
And that is learning to think together. Oh. And the reason it comes up is that And it may be most acute for something like climate change, but I think it would also show up in a lot of other areas. The problem itself is so daunting and complex that unless we can find some common conceptual anchors, we're likely to just bounce all over the place. And so there's a step where the community tries to find a common perspective from which we can start delving into more detail. Otherwise, the conversation just starts to look like a bag of marbles. So it's something funny about having a shared conceptual framework.
So,
well, I think if three would be we need each other instead of I need you, then it becomes something from I to us. And when there's an us, because what strikes me with the word community is that a lot of things these days are called a community. It could be a small village, which is called a community, and all the people hate each other. There's no community at all.
Right.
So I think what you do is write down what are the prerequisites of being a community, seeing each other, knowing each other, needing each other, and then doing things together. And I think there is a difference between a community and a team, because a team can train to do things together, while a community seems to be more getting together in times of need when something needs to be done. Mm-hmm. They can be autonomous, they can be separate, but in times of trouble, when something needs to be done, they come together to achieve it. I think that's the difference between a team and a community.
Mm-hmm. So how about saying that... I did actually have at some points in this that we see whether we know each other. The problem is the each other got so annoying that it, because I was trying to make this nice kind of catchy thing that you could say, you know, and so the each other started to get, but yeah, you can do it as we see each other, we know each other, we need each other, we are a team, and let's do this. Because what you're talking about, Jerry, is that you can't get to let's do this until you have this, we are a team, we know how to work together, and we know that we can.
A community is a new identity. The individual identities that say, I know, I see you, mm-hmm. become a kind of we identity by the third step.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the word mutual support. That's why I mentioned we.
Well, the mutual support falls into the we need each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or we can help each other. We can help each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's not we need each other. We can help each other because we trust, we know.
Right. So if we put in here, I'm going to try and amend this to, I'm going to put this in the chat. We see each other. We know other, we need each other. See how the each other gets annoying. We are a team, and let's do this. And then the words that would go with them would be awareness, connectedness, resilience. It's different than collaboration. What would that word be? How about complementarity? Or is that?
Well, I don't think all the four should be we. I think I see you. When you talk about community formation, it is I see you, you see me, there is still an I, a you, and then you get to know each other, and then a we develops. So I think the we only emerges in the third stage, when people start to talk about the community and about us. Because in the first stage, there's still autonomous people. Like in Jerry's problem, there might be some people that think about it, but nobody has a way to collaborate. They're not used to thinking about attacking this problem together.
So I see you and you see me, and then you go to we know each other?
Yeah.
Each other, we are a team, let's do this. But see, I'm trying to get the other one in there. Oh, I lost it. Awareness, connectedness, resilience. But there's this, what's the word for the we are a team? It's more like effectiveness. Now, what did you say, Jerry, you're trying to get at?
I was advocating something like we think the same way. We think together. So rather than everyone being an individual font of opinion,
okay,
there's a sense that we have a shared perspective on the world.
Right.
That's part of what makes us a community. Yeah. I mean, for example, a community could be all the third grade teachers in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with geographical proximity. It has everything to do with we live in the same world. We have the same conceptual frameworks. We have the same sort of models. And that's what makes us a community.
But what if you're a community that doesn't have a shared perspective? I guess you could say that there are elements of our perspectives that are shared.
Well, I think it'll be an ineffectual community.
Hmm.
It'll still be disparate and sort of scattered in its actions. So it really won't look like a community.
Yeah, but I think if you look at different types of communities, if you go back to the literature, communities of practice, communities of interest, communities of purpose, communities of, say, bands, like in the military, mm-hmm. There are some communities that train to spring into action in time of needs. These are more responsive communities.
But so, their ability to spring into action flows from their shared understanding of how we make decisions, the problems that are important, how we solve problems. I mean, if you're in the military, you have a very powerful conceptual anchor. It's called chain of command.
Yeah, but for example, if you look at communities of interest, a problem emerges and people have to start solving the problem, then first they have to do what you say, start to think together about what is this problem about. While, for example, communities of action, a fire brigade, they don't have time to think and practice. They must be ready to jump into action right away because the training last week.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, I'm also thinking of geographical communities. I would say that there's a balance between shared perspective and diversity. So it's like we have diversity and coherence.
I would agree. And it may be that if a community spends the time to think together, they discover that they have three or four different perspectives, and that's us. You know?
Yes, yes.
So in my homeowners association, we have some people that are retired, and we have some people that are just starting their families. So we have different perspectives about what it means to be a community of 45, you know, units.
Right. Well, and if the community is effective, both the diversity and the coherence are useful.
That's right. But part of my shared understanding with all of my neighbors is that some of us are retired and some of us are just starting families. So some of us want things quiet and stable. Other people want more playground space.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to deal with that. I learned to enjoy the sound of children.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't too hard, but.
Okay, so we have this sort of a 5-point thing. And actually, I moved collaboration over to we are a team, unless you, I don't know if that's the right term for that. I moved collaboration over to that fourth one, and effectiveness actually really only comes afterward.
Yeah.
Because you can't get the effectiveness without the collaboration, the ability to collaborate, this working together thing. Well, you could, instead of we are a team, you could say we work together, we think together. So let's see.
Yeah, well, like I said, there are different types of communities. And I think it would be a bit ambitious to go to all of them tonight, but I really like this four or five stages because it's much more than I ever imagined. I never thought about it, so thank you.
Well, I think this is kind of the things that I see people talking about when they say community. And what I was seeing is that I think people sometimes are talking past each other because one person is talking about awareness and someone else is talking about effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're both talking about community, but they're talking about different aspects. And sometimes they're talking about different stages that you can't have the effectiveness without the awareness. And like you said, the ability to work together. I mean, that can be a problem if you say, okay, we're going to become an effective community, but you haven't gone through these other stages. You can't just jump over them. And I do think they are somewhat of stages in the sense that each one builds on the ones beneath it. It's almost like one of the pyramids, you know?
Mm-hmm. Community has become very, very, very container. How is it? A container notion? Is that an English word?
Yeah.
We call it container begrip, container notion. It's a big bag.
Right.
Of course, with the digitization, we call all these online communities, which in the beginning were nothing more than, oh, we're all online in the same place. But over the years, if you look at LinkedIn and if you look at other places, there are actually some people say, okay, I'm in that trade too. That's step one. Then, okay, we talk about this kind of subjects. There are two or three that bind us. Then some communities start to do things together because they realize that people you would have never met in the physical world now can collaborate digitally. So I think the digital thing has made I see you a lot more easier because you now see people that you never saw before. So there are a lot of more community building opportunities. There are so many that still not a lot come to that third or fourth stage. That's why there are so many dead LinkedIn groups, Facebook pages, even complete social networks die these days. I mean, Google just closed one. Google just closed one. I mean,
I can give you an example of the other end of the spectrum. The city of Palo Alto experimented with getting blocks, you know, literally residential blocks together to take action. And the initial resistance was that people were afraid to knock on the door of their next door neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only 40 feet away, but I've never done more than wave at in the morning and I'm afraid to knock on your door.
Yep. And I can believe that.
Yeah.
I think I've figured out the best term for the we work together one, which is collective capacity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, capacity is definitely capacity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe the fifth stage is called develop capacity. And then that let's do this is somewhere in the sentence. Because as soon as a we, you can have that as a goal, to develop a capacity to put out fires, to respond to immediate needs, to...
Well, so it's like, you know, when you say, like, for example, when you say, I see you and you see me, then the subtext, like, subtitle, whatever, is awareness. Then when you say, we know each other, subtitle is connectedness. and then we need each other, so the subtitle is resilience. Then the next one is we work together, collective capacity. And then the let's do this, it's effectiveness. Well, I don't know if that's even the right thing, but
well,
you say productivity, but in the sense of a, depending on the community, that doesn't really work.
This translates pretty easily into kind of a diagnostic protocol. And I think you're right, they're sequential. Each one builds on the previous. And there are probably a few key things to look for at each level.
Exactly.
So you could use this to consider a grouping to see, is it, at what stage is it in terms of becoming a community?
Yeah, and you could say, you know, assess, you could design questions that assess, you know, where are we on that? And yeah, then you could design story eliciting questions.
Yes.
So that you could say, okay, when was the last time you found out something surprising about one of your neighbors? And if people can't come up with anything, they're not doing very good on the awareness.
No.
And you know, when was the last time you found out that you and your neighbor had complementary strengths or something like that?
Or you ask, when was the first time you found out something surprising about somebody you didn't know? Or
mm-hmm.
And then ask, where was it? Was it in your neighborhood? Was it in your work? Was it online?
Mm-hmm.
And then diagnose where these people are building communities and what stage they are.
Oh, right. Well, it depends on whether you already know, like if you're focused on one community or if you just want to talk about a lot of communities. Yeah.
Harold, I was thinking about your education project. I would expect that the teachers see themselves as a community, but I don't know if the parents do.
I think one of the problems with education in the Netherlands is that the teachers don't see themselves as a community anymore.
That would be interesting to find out.
That's one of the things they want back, community formation on the local level to solve problems, to have something like, okay, we got 100 kids at home, we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we can. The yes, we can do this kind of mentality instead of, oh, there are rules, there's money, there's a problem, I don't care, it's not my job.
Right.
And although the individuals see the children, they don't develop the capacity to say, shit, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
From too operational, to...
So they don't show that fifth point in being a community.
And I think it starts at two. I don't know you. They know their colleagues in school, but they don't know the colleagues next door. They don't know the problems of that school. They don't know the solutions that have been invented 3 kilometers away.
Well, that isn't with using the word no, because it can mean two things. It's no as in am aware of, versus no as in I'm connected to. There's a subtle difference there. You know what I mean? Like
the funny thing is, we do a similar project with the Reformed. You got Catholics, Protestants, and then you got the heavy part. I think you call them the Amish or so. In the Netherlands, we have what we call the black tie people. They are always dressed in black. And the funny thing is that they are talking about stage 4. So that's that very Christian closed group that do everything together, and they know they're different than from the rest of the world, and they are in stage 4.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the education system is somewhere between 1 and 2.
Wow.
Which is logical, because I think you see the same in the Islamic communities. They are so separated and different from the rest of the world that they do things together that the others don't. Okay. I'm not talking about terrorist attacks. I'm talking about community.
I think there's a difference between, in English, that we use the word know to mean both forms of knowledge, which is too bad, because like, for example, in French, you just say means know, like in being aware of or understanding something, whereas connaît means know as in the sense of connectedness.
Yeah.
You know this person. which is a very different thing. So it's kind of difficult in English to distinguish those things. Do you have different words for that in Dutch also? Know as in knowledge versus know as in know a person, have a connection to a person?
Knowing can mean that you are cooperating for years and you know each other inside out. And it could be, I know who you are. I know your name. You're from the other side of the street. That's another kind of knowing.
No, but I mean, are there different actual words?
No.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah, I think in some ways French is a much better language in terms of precise. I mean, even though they have fewer words than English, they have very good distinctions that we're missing in some things.
Well, knowledge is maybe knowing and being related. Related is closer to connection.
Yeah, in fact, I wonder if saying we know each other is even a bad way to do it, because it sounds like you're talking about awareness, but I'm not talking about awareness. I mean, we are connected. We are part of something. You know, mm-hmm. We have a connection.
Do you mean connected, or do you simply mean that I know a great deal about you, and I know that you understand me?
That's not what I mean. I mean, connect. If you say, do you know someone in this sense in French, you said, you know, can't say it correctly, but the verb is connaître, which means, it doesn't mean you know who they are, you know them, like, you know, have you ever talked to them? You have sometimes people say, I know of them, but I don't know them. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this, you know, it shouldn't really be we know each other. It should be we are familiar with each other. I don't know what the right way is to say that in English, actually.
Yeah. I can relate to you. I can, yeah. It also has to do with we have something in the past together. I mean,
yeah.
We have a history. We have a
history. Yeah.
We had a trajectory. No, a path. We've laid down a path.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe just say we are related. Although obviously that sounds like it means family. We are both part of something.
Well,
yeah, something.
Cynthia, there are people that I know exceptionally well mm-hmm. because of our history, but I sure don't think of us as connected.
Huh.
In fact, I wish I didn't know them.
Hmm.
So that sure. It's more than I know of them. I know them fairly intimately and don't like them.
Okay.
That's the thing. It doesn't mean that you have to like them. If you say that we're connected, like, I have neighbors that I disagree with on a lot of things, but still neighbors.
Okay.
You know, I still think of them as a neighbor, and I have family members that I don't necessarily get along with that well, extended family.
Really?
And yeah, I know it's unique.
Hard to imagine, yeah.
But they're still, you know, part of my family, and I would never deny that, you know? So it's like, well, maybe just saying we are connected.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it time to move on to discussing what P&I is about in these four or five stages?
Yeah.
What you can do. Yeah. Because I think seeing the other through story is a thing we do in a lot of P&I projects. Oh, do you look at it that way? I never thought you experienced it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, now you tell me what. Now you told me why I don't like you.
Yeah, I mean, I think for each one of these types, for each one of these stages, you could say these would be stories about, you know, the stories in this kind of a project would be about this or that, and we already said a little bit of that. Can you think of the time? Or these are some of the questions that you would ask about this. So like, maybe we can come up with one or two questions for each one. So a question could be for this one is,
well, I would think if there's some topic that brings us together, whether it's education or climate change or whatever it is, sharing stories is a way of getting through the first and second stages of community building. I mean, if I know the stories that are important to you, I learn something about you.
Right.
I may well feel more connected because I have a similar story. Or your story provoked me to think of something else. I mean, that's going to create not only I know you, but it's also going to create a sense that, we share something. We're connected in some way. So the questions may not need to be specifically about layers in community building. They could just be on whatever topic brings us to the same table.
Yeah, but that's assuming there's a topic in advance, which I think is a very legitimate way of building a community around a topic. So it's a community of interest.
Yeah.
While, for instance, a community of practice is much more about developing skills of the individual participants and bringing further a skill set in a certain domain.
But they have a topic in common. We share an interest in a certain area of practice. You know, we're all clinical psychologists. We're all, you know, arborists.
Yeah. But I mean, there the topic is much more about the person, while in sustainability, or the topic is much more societal or organizational.
It's hard to imagine a group of people contemplating being a community and they have nothing in common.
No, but the third one, I think, is what happens in a lot of the old villages is that they're bound geographically and you're quite isolated. Or you're in the middle of a city and you have in a lot of poorer neighborhoods that they form communities to survive together. Mm-hmm. So I think in things that come together geographically, being ready to defend, to survive, to handle problems, I think is a third reason for a community. So that's more a community of dependence.
So they have a pretty strong common interest, which is mutual support and survival.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While in community of practice, it's more development of skills. And I think that community of survival is quite close to the fire brigade that have to survive something dangerous called the fire.
Anyway, I think a community of practice is not just individual skill development. It's oftentimes formed as a way of advancing the field.
Exactly. So the individual development is part of, but always related to a common development of a field.
Yeah.
And usually that's a field that's not very common outside of the group. I mean, in the company I worked for, we had organic photoconductor communities. Now you'll find three in the world, one at Canon, one at Xerox, and one at OSA.
Okay.
Maybe one at Hewlett Packard. That's the only four you will find in the world.
But they have a common topic.
Yeah, but they couldn't talk to each other because they were inside. So we knew that the other three existed, but you could never talk to each other because everybody wanted to be advancing that topic. So boundaries play a role, I think, in communities. It could be physical boundaries.
Yes.
It could be subject boundaries. It could be skill boundaries. It could be...
Yes. And actually, boundaries play a role in at least, let's see, they play a role in awareness and in connectedness.
Yeah, their new boundaries probably are established.
Actually, they play a role in all of them, really, but they get established in the first two.
Yeah, I think in the first two, I take out the boundary between us, and I assert a boundary around us.
Yes. Oh, I like that. I'm going to write that down.
If we look at the hexagon sense-making canvas again, Cynthia, we're moving from autonomy, from chaos to autonomy, to complexity, to cooperation. We're doing the right side of the sense-making canvas.
Could somebody say that again?
And I have developed a successor or a more elaborate version of the Kinefin model, which is called the hexagon sense-making canvas. Mm-hmm. And has two new domains compared to Kinefin, and one is autonomy, and the other one is cooperation. So if you look at the video, do you know the Kinefin framework?
Nope.
Ah.
I'm going to look it up since we're done.
It was developed by Cynthia and somebody we call D. somewhere in a company called I, and it ends with BM. They published a paper in 2003 called, and it contains the Kinefin model. Or Kinefin framework, and it is about the epistemology of maybe that's the wrong word. It's about order, complicatedness, complexity, chaos, and disorder. You can look it up at Wikipedia.
Isn't to be found. So that's what I'm more concerned about at the moment.
Hello.
I think that's Jenny of Stevens. What?
Oh, Stephen, you know, okay.
That reminds me, I'm just going to say really quickly, that what you're saying reminds me of the practice of walking around the medicine wheel, because this is also connected to the medicine wheel. And one of the things people using that is they actually take a physical walk around the medicine wheel and talk about how things are changing as they go through these things. And the medicine wheel is set up in the same way of going around from chaos to, going from less connectedness to greater connectedness, and then renewing all over again. And so that's, the people actually do a sense-making exercise in which they set up a thing on the floor and then they walk around it considering all these different conditions. So in a way, we're talking about walking around that wheel in a community.
Yeah, but it makes me wonder, Murray, does that kind of dynamic happen in storytelling? Performance storytelling, that you tell the story in such a way that what starts as something chaotic, the identities become known, they are connected, they form a network, and by the end of the story, you have a we in the audience. That your storytelling has an effect on the audience that develops a community by sharing a story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You do it? Can you do that to us?
I try. It's interesting that you asked for that sort of developmental phase. I was going to comment on something else when I unmuted myself. But I went to an evening a week ago Saturday, which was put on by a water charity. And the fundraising thing, water development, I guess. And it was interesting because everything was water stories. Or in the case of one story, was a pollution story. And I was there just as an observer, but the storytellers were people I knew who were from the performance field. And yes, you could see that whole you could feel that bind in the room as the stories unfolded. The pollution story was particularly a tough one because it was about basically factories polluting groundwater and the effect of that within a community, the toxic effect of the spread of cancers and that sort of thing. It was an interesting evening, and you could, that was developed. I'm trying to think of the sequence now of the evening, because the evening itself was planned sequentially from teller to teller to from specific to general. And the final teller of the evening, there were four stories, four tellers, was a person who specializes in what we're now calling wonder tales, but they're basically can be traditional folk tales and fairy tales of the classic sense. And she had a beautiful water story, a very universal story that was So we started with with corporate pollution, and a specific case that involves Cybergigi in New Jersey, and then we ended up with a water story that I can't remember the origin of it, but it was about a peasant who had to travel every day to a water source and bring water back to the village, and but his container leaked slightly, and he was criticized for not bringing back a full container. But what he had done basically was he had created a green walkway along the way because of the water that was leaking, had fostered growth and vegetation in an otherwise arid area. And so that was it was a good byproduct as opposed to the Cybergigi story. And you may or may not be familiar with it, Cynthia. It was on the Tom River in New Jersey over about 50 years. I don't know if it's might have been mentioned in environmentalists on the East Coast. But, where they had polluted the groundwater and had known they were polluting the groundwater and basically tended to ignore it until you couldn't ignore it 2.5 generations later. And that story was actually taken, that the person who presented that had based it on a book, that an expose, journalistic expose. But he had storified the book in classic storytelling sense, rather than just repeated the research. He put it in a story context, and he happens to be one of the members of the Ottawa group who are quite good, quite effective at doing that type of, and I call this storification. It's using the classic techniques to trigger memory, because it's really, I mean, you can, it's the old thing of you can present facts until the cows don't come home, and nobody will ever remember them. But if you put it in a human context, in a story context, then yeah, we do remember them. And he talked and the community, basically the community rising up when they realized that they're, and you have all that conflict, of course, half of his work in the plant and the plant supports the town economically, but it's killing them at the same time. And they were using a chemical process that had been mostly unrefined for a 100-year period. It had been originally developed in Germany in the late 1800s, and then just replicated wherever there was a market for it. There was reference to the same problem in Australia. With Cybergigi. I mentioned the company because I can go find the source if anybody ever wants to challenge me on it. But,
what are you saying against Cybergigi?
Cybergigi.
What is that?
That's a huge international chemical.
I guess I'm not understanding the spelling of it well.
Oh, C-I-B-A-G-E-R? No, that wouldn't be right. Be a Y in there.
Cybergigi.
Cybergigi. That's how you pronounce it, yeah.
C-I-B-A-G-I-E-G-Y.
Just the way it sounds.
Yeah. At any rate, that it was an interesting evening because it's something I loved to be a part of. In fact, I mentioned that because they were good friends of mine, and I said, gee, we would do this again. I would love to develop storylines for that, you know, just a specific type of email along those lines.
Reminds me of last Friday. I was a bit disappointed because I couldn't go to. Do you guys know Nora Bateson, the daughter of Gregory Bateson?
Mm-hmm.
She was in the Netherlands and she held one of her what's called warm data labs. And she describes warm data as the stuff that keeps systems together. So I think that's what keeps systems for together, and that's what is generated to the steps that we are talking about here. And she had a list of anthropological concepts that she said were necessary to generate connection between people. And to, so I just pinged Erwin, my colleague, who was lucky enough to be there because I had to be somewhere else. And I think if we put that warm data concept next to what we are discussing here, we have a good link to anthropology of community formation.
Warm data, that's an interesting phrase.
It's simple and it's not big. I hate big data.
You get lost in the science, or you get lost in huge description. Warm data is just very simple, very effective.
Yeah, she describes it as what is in between the agents, what keeps the agents together. So that could be the connection that Cynthia is talking about. And I've been talking to her about combining warm data theory with P&I to work in organizational work. And as she's looking for work, and we are getting better in sales, I think she's interested.
actually, somebody introduced me to her, but she hadn't received it. I was thinking about it would be an interesting exercise to write a few questions that you might ask in a P&I project that was related to each one of these things. And I've been writing a few while listening, to what everybody's been saying. And I have just a few, but I thought maybe we could brainstorm and try to come up with two or three for each one. So for awareness, I have three, because that's the easiest one, because we do that a lot. So for that, I had what has happened in relation to some topic that people don't know about. So that's kind of like, and the purpose of this sort of project would be helping people become more aware of each other. So you're getting people to talk about themselves, and then that's the stories are going back and forth. And another one would be, what experience have you had that explains what something or other is really like for you? And that's another way of saying what people don't know. And then another one is, did you ever have something happen and think, if everybody knew that, they would understand me better? Now, what was it that happened? So those are all kind of things that if you asked people those questions and then you gathered all those stories and then all the stories got to everyone else, you would get, there would be this much greater awareness of each other.
Would you also say that if you ask a series of these questions and then somebody starts saying, no, I never heard it, so they answer with no or yes, that you could almost, I hated saying this, but measure the development level of the community, or at least assess.
That's better word, yes.
So if you do that over and over again, you could follow the... And I think that somewhere in the last level, there is a word missing called dissipative. It has to be, a community is always creating something. It is a creating system.
Right.
But either it creates rapid response, or it creates novelty, or it creates invention, or it creates joint action, or whatever.
What if it creates stability and conformity?
For example, yeah. It has properties.
Yeah. I was just suggesting that not every community is creative or generative. sometimes the community is a source of shared constraint.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That can also be a good thing, too. It can be good or bad or both. Yeah.
Question, or not a question, a comment I was going to make just when I turned my mic on and before Harold had queried me on the previous thing I talked about story was that competition seems to be a destructive force. When we were talking about about community building, that it was, and I maybe competition could be what might be the word changed to you know, not community is what I'm looking for.
Well, I think competition in the sense of making parallel streams within the community to have multiple takes at solving a problem is a very good tactic to increase diversity. But if competition arises between the members, then that's counterproductive to the goal of the community. Like we have two football teams and they don't cooperate in time of need and they're in a small village, then you have a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that was what I was thinking. That was a thought that had popped into my mind at that point, where you had competition that destroyed the continuity or the community.
We got a new attendant. He's very young.
I noticed, yeah.
You probably have a lot to say, but we might not understand it.
Ending up now. I actually, I'm on the point you're just making there about the systems. I mean, you could say that there's a system of what you're trying to bring in as the community or what you're trying to engage, but there's also a knowledge system that you may be creating around the engagement, the collection of stories and there's a knowledge system that's going to be used for sense making. And I don't know necessarily, it may, one community in relation to one topic and one knowledge system may be putting constraints on because that's what the knowledge system is speaking to them about. And also maybe what the interventions or the context is saying as well. There may be two things going on. There may be like this set of stories says, be careful. And we were trying to be bold and wild. Or it could be we wanted to be careful, but the stories are telling us something different. We need to act. So it might be that you've got more than one knowledge system. And I'm kind of curious about how that embodied nature can help to navigate that idea that, because I find a lot of times when you talk to people and they do these brainstorming, they're all doing word association type stuff where word leads to word. Whereas it's something more embodied, like that indigenous practices and I think narratives might take you to the same place. Maybe you don't just get one word sparking another word, but there has to be this pause, this kind of like, what is actually going on here moment, that kind of performative moment. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's tying in with that kind of idea of sense making that I've been exploring, but I think also is related to this.
Well, I think that's a good remark that from what level onward is sense-making taking place in such a community? When does it get sense-making capabilities? Because in the sense-making, the P&I work we do, well, then after 3 months when all the story has been collected and there's a report and then there's that four-hour meeting we call the sense-making session, and it's usually meant to be the pinnacle of the whole project. But there's not enough time and people give it one try and then it's over. You do the evaluation and it's gone. And 90% of the potential value is lost in the stories. I mean, So these days we start very early on in the sales process and say, okay, if you're spending all these hours, why only have one sense-making session of 3 hours? Mm-hmm. Why not have 5 or 6 of them, even in a 2-day row with several people? We are there anyway. And I think that's something that's much more natural in a community, that whenever a problem arises or a challenge arises, that knowledge system that you're talking about, that was trained, that was experienced, that there's a memory of that same river flowing over 3 years ago. This relates also to the folk stories exercise. I wonder, Cynthia, in how far a folk stories exercise can create a community. So I think there's much more to this topic than just community. I think it relates to a whole lot of sense-making exercises, P&I exercises, folktale exercises that can help create a community or strengthen or revitalize or invigorate or activate. Or how do you make a community, a latent community or a dormant community, spring into action again if it's not a river flowing through the village?
Well, I always think of it like a spiral, you know, like in sort of everyday life, there's this spiral that when you're further up the spiral, there are activities that will take you even further up. But if when you're lower down, they're not available to you. So like, you know, in terms of your energy level, like so if you're feeling like really down and you're sick or whatever, you can't get up and go out jogging or take a walk because it's just not available. And so you can't push yourself up the spiral. So it's like there's kind of like these things that will push you up the spiral and things that will slide you down the spiral. And the same thing happens with community. I mean, a community that has all these five things going on is way up the spiral of community, right? And if you're way down on the bottom and you don't even know each other, you know, you don't know anything about each other, then you need things that fit into that are going to take you up a level to the next level of the spiral there. But you can't then go ahead and I think that's one of the problems people have in community building. They will misapply things. They will take a group of people that are way down the spiral and apply something that would work for people further up, but it doesn't work. It just fails because they're not in a position that they can use it.
So we should also talk about maintaining level and maintenance of a community, for instance, rhythm, a ritual, that kind of things. If you start to know each other, you need activities to come to the next level. And when you're in the fifth level or the fourth level, you need regular meetings. The communities of practice that I was part of noticed that when you have a meeting every 2 months, it's not enough. It should be once a month, because if you miss one, the most of the community will have met last month and the community is not lost. But if you take the rhythm to 2 months, it's only six times a year. And then there's the holidays and it's five times a year. And then there is a problem and it's four times a year. And then the community is lost. So you better have 12 meetings or 11, one not in July. You need rhythm, you need rituals, you need maybe even artifacts.
Well, I think that the rhythms and rituals that are appropriate and useful for one, I don't want to say stage, but one form or sense or state of a community is not appropriate for another. Like, for example, here's another ritual, is like a working group, right? Say you have a group and you have these working groups and they get together and they do things, right? If you try to have a working group when hardly anyone even knows anything about anyone else, the working group's going to fail because everyone's just going to sit there and not say anything because no one wants to step forward. So at the level, you know, for the working group to have a utility, then you have to have some of these other things in place. Although there are sometimes things that are further up the spiral that will pull the community up there, like there's a challenge, but that kind of requires a lot of individual momentum, individual commitment. And
I heard a story about a small village near the German border, and there are 743 people there. and they have a yearly festival where they get 4,000 visitors. It's a music festival. And that day, the number of volunteers is equal to the number of people in the village, apart from, say, children of 2 years old. But everybody over 8 years old has a part in that festival. And that creates a sense of community for another 12 months that is enough to keep the community together. Mm-hmm. You should have a sun festival, Jerry.
Well, you know, one thing I've noticed about working with people, I've done a lot of working with people remotely for years and years. And what I've noticed is that when we meet in person, there's this kind of alignment that takes place. And then we continue to work remotely, this sort of feeling of alignment kind of starts drifting down and down and down. And there's more arguments and there's more disagreements and there's more misunderstandings. And then we get together in person and it gets all fixed up again. You know, we understand each other again. There are things happening that we can't really put our finger on, but we agree more, we understand each other better, and then it starts drifting back down again. And if you don't keep, like, reconnecting every year or so, it eventually you get to the point where you almost can't fix it. I don't know if anyone else has noticed that.
Oh, yeah. Doing my PhD, I flew to the UK every 2 to 4 months to meet with my promoter, because my promoter was in Eindhoven and my co-promoter was in Manchester. And I noticed that I had to fly over to Manchester every 2 to 4 months because we were making awful programming errors. He was developing the program to the left and I was developing it to the right. And we were exactly canceling out our coding efforts. So, yeah. I think it depends, the rhythm depends on the kind of work you do. I think knowledge work every 2 or 3 months is enough, but if you're more operational, if you're in sales, I think they have sales meetings every day. What's the crowd like today? How do we sell? They do it every day. Mm-hmm.
Okay, can I go back to these questions? So I had come up with 3 questions for the awareness thing, but for the other ones, I want to get your help. So we have, for the connectedness, the only one I have so far is, when was the last time you were surprised by your connection to someone in the community? Now, what's another good question you could ask people if you were supporting this connectedness thing? Now, this is kind of the part where people do social network analysis, when they ask people, you know, who do you rely on? You know, so that we could say, when was the last time you reached out to someone for advice? That would be one thing that would be good there. Or someone reached out to you. And then another one would be tell about a time when you discovered a connection to someone that either you or they didn't know about. That would be it. I'm trying to get these 3 questions for each one, because then it gives you a real good, if you can look at the questions for each one, it really gives you a good sense of what is going on in that situation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And do you think that once we get to the 5th level, the 4th level, that the question should differ depending on the goal of the community? For instance, if I'm talking about a fire brigade again, I'm thinking more about after action review questions. So something you want to discuss that happened during the last fire we put out. Well, for example, if it is a community of practice, something that struck you in your work that you think you should discuss with colleagues. And I have the feeling that we are talking about community as a single entity, while in a lot of organizations you have several communities next to each other. That
oh yeah, but the thing is, usually the reason that I'm thinking of community singly is that usually when you're doing something, when you have a project, you have a particular community in mind. You don't mean community as an abstract, as everybody belongs to a lot of them. I mean, that's pretty rare that you would just say, we're going to do a project related to just community in life. You would have a community specifically in mind, the community of people who live here, who work on this, who work here, who have this disease, that sort of thing. I mean, well, practically. I'm
more thinking about a community of, say, people that have a different value system in an organization. There's a lot of talk these days about transformation management. How do you transform a culture? How do you get away from A as an organization? And I was thinking, if you have the existing system as a community and you have small islands with differently functioning communities around it, that either way this old core and gradually move the system to a transformation point, I would say that a tipping point in popular language. I think I wonder in how far communities play a role in transformations in organizations, whether it is the move to solar, or it is changing the corporate culture, or reinventing the corporation, or I always have the feeling that communities play a vital role in transformation, because they are kind of entities that have their own life within a certain context.
I like what Jerry just said in the chat. The sense of community is essentially a memory which fades with time unless it is periodically refreshed, which is the role of ritual. That's very cool.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting back to Kneffen.
Yeah.
Heimat.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. D hates me for that. For years I'm saying that the Kneffen in German is Heimat. So sense of multiple belongings.
Yes, sense of belonging. Okay, now I have three questions for resilience. Let's see. Did I say the ones that I had for connectedness? No, I don't think I did. I have, when was the last time you were surprised by your connection to someone in the community? When was the last time you reached out to someone for advice or someone reached out to you? Tell about a time when you discovered a connection to someone that either you or they didn't know about. And then the for resilience I have, when was the last time you helped a neighbor? And I'm thinking locally, but like, you know, a neighbor, a colleague, whatever would be appropriate to the community. When was the last time you helped, well, you could say someone in this community?
You were helped or were helped?
Or someone helped you. Another one is, and I got this from what you said, think of an image of an old style community fire brigade of people with a chain of buckets. Isn't that what they used to call, what do they call that? A fire line or a bucket brigade. Yeah. Fire bucket brigade. What experience does that image bring to your mind? Because I think that would be a really good question. And then I have, when you think of the words collective and resilience, what experience comes? Okay, so now we're up to the collective capacity. And the only question I have for that is, when was the last time you worked together with someone on something and it came out better than either of you could have done alone?
That's good.
Yeah, so we need two more. I don't know why I do these things. It seems like a thing that once you had this, you could then make a table and then you could see what we, you know, what the differences are. And you could almost in a way see, like, these are almost mini projects, these questions, saying if you collected stories using these questions, the answers that you get and then you disseminated those stories around would, you know, push you up the spiral in this area. I just thought of something by saying area. What if, consider the possibility that these are not stages, but dimensions. Is that a possibility?
Five dimensions?
Yeah. What if these are dimensions? Is it possible to have a high collective capacity and a low awareness? You can think of situations, like say there's a plane crash or there's a disaster scenario. You've heard of these stories where there's a disaster scenario. The people don't know each other at all, right? But they're thrown together and they need to rely on each other. And it doesn't matter that they don't know each other. True.
I think there's a difference between a team, a crew, and a community. Because a crew is people in roles that are pre-trained, and when put together in whatever combination, they function as a crew on an airplane. And I don't have, I have the feeling that the flight officers are a community, the stewardesses are a community, the purser's are a community. There are people from different communities that form a crew.
So you would say that people in that disaster scenario have not formed a community, even though...
No, but they are trained and they develop their role in their community, and then they come together on a flight and they run that flight.
Mm-hmm. And that probably applies to like surgery rooms too, where someone comes together with a trained nurse and some other things, and they are in a role so they just know what to do.
Operational teams in an operational theater is also crew-based. Yeah. Well, for example, football teams are not very well known for their community spirit because usually they fight and they hate each other. But they form teams because they,
Except teams that excel in a sport are almost always notable in the strength of their community and relationships.
Yeah, you know, I think the answer to my thing is, are these stages, do they have to be stages? I think they do. I'm thinking that I can't come up with.
For community, I think they do. But there are other ways to come at level 5, but they are not communities, they are crews.
Right.
So if I'm the new fireman at the local fire station, I participate in the crew, but I'm not part of the community.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so now we were doing collective capacity. I have, when was the last time you worked together with someone on something and it came out better? Now, what's another complimentary, and this has to be a story question. Let's see.
The question that occurs to me in this is talking about the community having a set of stories, and what are all the stories that you need to pass on to somebody that's coming new into the community so that they are now joined into it?
Okay. Tell a story about your community that you would tell someone joining it.
Mm-hmm.
They would need to know.
I'm from a small community 5 kilometers from here, and the locals know that the village used to be called Black Nazareth 100 years ago. And it had to do because they were growing tobacco there, and all the people that grew tobacco got very brown skin because of the tobacco. And we had a discussion on Facebook a couple of days ago, what was the origin of that name? And all suggestions came from all around the village. There were historians, and nobody knew about the tobacco anymore. So I added the story, and I got a lot of guesses, because people suddenly remembered. Uh-huh. But there are two competing stories there, because there is a road there called the French Way. And that was where a part of Napoleon's army after the battle in Austerlitz stayed and they never returned to France. And these were dark-haired, dark-skinned guys. And they mated with the local girls. And that's why the population of that village has much more darker skin than all the villages around it. They simply mingled with French. So there are two competing stories why it's called Black Nazareth. First is skin and French, and the other one is tobacco. Nobody knows the truth, of course.
Maybe it's both.
But you need to know these two stories mm-hmm. before you can be considered a local in the village, even if you're from outside. If you know, if you can tell that story on a birthday party, they know, oh, you must be from there.
I would like to submit that this question, which is a very good question, does not belong in collective capacity, but that it belongs in the connectedness one.
The memory that Telly and that Jerry was talking about. There's something like collective memory.
Yeah, collective memory. That's a great one to put there.
Collective memory. Preserved.
Yeah.
And I think
that works better under
I think major events in the community can create new stories like that.
Right.
Have you been in the 1850 flood? Have you been in the tobacco? Did you meet the French? What happened in the Second World War? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the big fire? That kind of stories that change the community, but also become part of the common story set.
Here I have one for collective capacity. Tell me about something our community has accomplished together. How did it happen?
Yeah.
That would be talking about collective capacity.
Mm-hmm. And I would even add the phrase that our community has achieved that could not have been done by us as individuals.
Ah, yes. Could not have been done by us as individuals. Yes.
I mean, recycling is something that the community may have done, but the bottom line is it was a bunch of individuals who decided to recycle paper.
Yep.
But getting a power generating plant together, or you know, that would be a collective effort by necessity.
Right.
But I think that this also relates to Carl Weick's work on sense making and high resilient organization and high performance organizations.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you're a level 5 community, you can do things by not even cooperating, but by knowing that the other one is doing this and you're doing that. Without seeing each other, you can almost function in a distributed fashion and still the result is produced. Mm-hmm. He's talking about clearing the deck on aircraft carriers and how everybody does his part on the ship and runs the ship, and they know instinctively where the other is without seeing them, because they have trained so much that they know that the other one is doing it without having any information that he is doing it.
There's an example like that from the field of baseball. There's some stories of shortstops, for example, who will throw a ball to first base or to somebody else, and they don't have to look. They know where that person's going to be because we know each other so well. So they act totally independently, but it's grounded in a very clear understanding of the group.
Ah, then how about this? When was the last time you saw someone trust someone else in our community or the whole community enough to take a chance on something? And if there wasn't any, then you have to work on that stage, because trust and, you know, taking a chance, sharing risk is part of the collective capacity. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got 3 in each category, except for the last one. Now I'm down to effectiveness, that is solving problems together. Now this is, tell me about the last problem you solved in our community, or we solved. What was the problem and how did we solve it? Now that's kind of something, tell me about something our community has accomplished together. So I'm not sure if that's...
No.
Or maybe something that's unique to this community, or that only...
So what I would say is that one thing about, tell me about something our community has accomplished together that could not have been done by us as individuals, I'd say that actually goes in the last.
It's
beyond collective capacity to actual effective action. Whereas this trust thing is, you know, like the building block, but it isn't the actual action, you know?
How about if you asked, could you give me an example of a problem that you would take to the community rather than try and solve on your own?
Yes. And that, I think, goes in the last category, too, of a...
Yeah.
The problem you would take to the community rather than trying to solve it on your own. Yeah. Okay, so now we have two for capacity and two for effectiveness.
Well, can you tell about an event that happened that was handled by the community that you were surprised the community could handle it?
Yeah.
And that references an actual event, whereas my question is a hypothetical.
It's more this could happen. Are we prepared? Are we trained enough? Do we rely on each other?
That's okay. I mean, it's good to have a balance between backward. Forward-looking questions, because a lot of people can't really do that, but it's like spice. You know, you can have a certain amount, but not too much.
You can count down there. Did you ever come across a challenge that you now think you should have taken to the community but didn't?
How about this? Tell me about a time when the diversity in our community was an asset.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And that's under the collective capacity. This is like, are there instances of these things that you can point to? Are you aware of these assets? Are there things that, you know, okay.
I think we are helping the education project now.
Oh, really?
Because I need to make communities, 72 of them.
Well, you know, the one where you said, could you give me an example of a problem you would take to the community rather than trying to solve it on your own? You can change that into a retrospective question by saying, an example of a problem you thought about trying to solve on your own and then decided you could take to the community.
Right.
Or, yeah. Like I just said, a problem that you didn't take to the community and now you wish you had taken to the community.
Ah,
something that you regret not taking to the community, but taking it elsewhere or trying it on your own.
That would actually go. I guess it would go in the effectiveness one way. Problem you should have taken instead of
that you tackled on your own or took somewhere else, but now regret you didn't take it to the community,
or that you did take to the community
and now regret. Yeah. A problem you did take to the community, now regret you did it.
Regret it, yeah.
That's a properly establishing one, yeah.
If you're talking about assessment, then, you know, and awareness of these things, then, yeah, you need to ask that too.
And you do that in your own filters. You know, you say, hold it, do I want to bring this to the community or not? Because you perceive a disruption that you don't want, as opposed to a disruption. You know, bring things up that purposely disrupt and engage, or you'll bring things that you don't want to disrupt because the engagement, which you perceive to be negative for whatever the question is. Or, you know.
Yep.
Is there always also a set of questions like, can you share us a story about something you would like to tell about your community but don't feel you can because, or something like that. You would like to talk about the community, but you don't know them enough, or you're not well informed enough, or you're all the five stages, or you hoped the community could do, but they never did it. So more the disappointment side of things.
Well, in a way, these questions are all written in the positive sense of show us the successes, but you can flip them all. And yeah. So, you know, each one, like if I go very back to the beginning, what has happened to you in relation to something that people don't know about, you could say, what has happened that you can't tell people that about? You know, and then you could run down each one and do that, and that would tell you even more.
If we apply this to Jerry's a problem of establishing that.
Yeah, let's hear more about that now, Jim.
What do you think that would help you, Terry? Jerry?
I've been focused, because of our topic, because we're interested in climate change, I've been focused on a lot on enhancing the quality of thought and using stories to try and you know, help people articulate what they're thinking. Because there's so many unconscious assumptions and preconceived notions and emotional blocks that it's very hard to have a productive conversation. And I think stories is a useful anchor for all the reasons that you've been teaching me for the last few months. But it provides the raw data from which people make assumptions and create a perspective. And it's useful to kind of let the stories bring that up to the surface.
Well, I know in the Netherlands there are a lot of activities around communities, usually villages, that want to go off the grid. And they buy a windmill, and they buy they tap into a river. They get some agricultural fermentation, natural gas stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want your case if we could have these questions like, can you share a story about where you saw somebody act irresponsibly with energy, with respect to energy? Or somebody that you something you saw that you admire, to come into that first stage, to have people share everyday experiences and then research these stories in a sense making session. Said, yeah. Oh my God, are these my neighbors? We need to talk, we need to educate. Or
we need to discuss. Can I share a screen with the group? Mm-hmm. Yes. Let me see if I can do it.
Well, we know you, so you can share a screen.
Well, let's see if it'll work. This is the graphic that we're using for us to think about the problem. There's oftentimes a lot of energy around proposals, like I think we should get off the grid, or we should recycle more, or we have to, you know, ban V8s or whatever. That debate tends to be fairly contentious and unconstrained. What we want to get people to do is to identify their broad perspective, their way of thinking about the issues. And what interests are they trying to secure? So rather than jump into a debate about, you know, what we should do, we wanted to kind of get them to identify these other elements. And I think that stories are a good way to do that. We identified around climate change 10 different perspectives. That is sort of high level statements about how to even think about the problem. Mm-hmm. And I think we present those to people and then ask them, can you share with us a story of something that you've been through that leads you to hold that particular perspective? So we try to get them to figure out where you're coming from and then tell us what has happened in your life that leads you in that direction. Mm-hmm. Or what has happened that makes you believe a certain proposal is a good idea. Or tell us a story about something that explains why you have such a strong interest in justice around climate change. So that's how we're thinking of using stories as a way of exposing and, you know, sort of making discussable this more complex thought structure.
I wonder, Cynthia, if the P&I planning questions could help Jerry. Say the mice on the wall or the fly on the wall questions, would they be helpful in this stage? So suppose you could hear anybody talk about climate change in the city, what wall would you like to be a fly on to hear that story? Is it City Hall? These questions are in the book. Mm-hmm. I think they're in the book, and at least they are in it's that kind of question. And
I've got the book, but I haven't gotten to that section yet.
Yeah, there's the fly on the wall, but there's also those, like the magic ears one. What conversation would you like to listen to? So that's a different one, because the fly on the wall is kind of like you're seeing things happening as they play out. The magic ears one is like, that's a Harry Potter reference, is what conversation would you like to listen to that you can't normally listen to?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember, there might be one or two more.
Yeah, there's that one on the colossal success or the colossal failure. So when would your initiative itself be a colossal failure or a colossal success? An enormous success. I always keep forgetting these words.
That doesn't matter.
So you think about your community formation. For instance, I think we are off the grid, but it's very power supply is very unreliable. Could be a horrible scenario for a lot of people in your community. It's nice to produce your own energy, but if it's at the expense of reliability, which, by the way, indication in the US anyway, but I'm not sure. I hear this story about power outages and things like that. So it might even improve the local situation. I'm not sure. But
well, I think if I remember correctly, you're supposed to put those two things together. Like, you take the scenario, like I'm a fly on the wall listening to this happening, witnessing this thing happening, and it either goes extremely well or extremely poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And you combine those things, and then you say, because you can't just say, I would like to have this happen. You have to then think, well, and it works or it doesn't work, because if you don't think about the possibilities of it working and not working, then you don't kind of, I mean, the point is to try to figure out what are your hopes and fears, because if you get at that, you can get at your goals, and then it can help you improve your plan. Whereas if you just say, if you just have a plan and you don't explore what's around the plan, then your plan's not as complete as it should be. You know, you have to kind of think about what happens.
If you have a 5-stage project where you want to develop a community, you could say, ask questions. The questions we've just been doing, but also about the project. What if we try to make people know each other, but what could go wrong? They find out they hate each other, or they find out they never want to work together again, or they like each other so much that we never get into the project because they're partying all the time. I mean,
well, actually, the place where those things came from, that success and failure thing, came from when I was first starting to consult with people, helping them do projects. And I'd say, okay, so what do you want to do for your project? And they'd say, okay, here's our plan. We're going to get these stories and we're going to do this. And at first I would be like, okay, I'll help you do this. And then later on, after we'd finished it, they'd say, oh, we're really disappointed because this thing didn't happen. And I'm like, how was I supposed to know you wanted that? You never said anything about that. You just told me your plan. And so I developed this thing of saying, okay, tell me a story about this project being so successful that you just want to do lots more. And then saying, you know, tell me about a story about this project failing and you say, I'm going to do this PNI is worthless.
There's a software system. There's a software system called Nera Firma that takes you to all these P&I planning questions.
Really? Huh. But anyway, the point is that I was trying to make is that came from experience, and with being surprised by people. The thing is that people often don't know why they're doing what they're doing and what their real goals are. And they mistake the plan for the purpose.
Yeah, and you have to adopt these questions to the local, because that fly on the wall question, that doesn't work in companies. People get offended. And if you say, if you were a reporter and you could be in any corner, what corner would you stand as a reporter? Then people, it's the same question, but people get it.
Right, right.
So don't take the questions literally, take the gist of the question literally.
Right, right.
If you could install a security camera everywhere in the city, where would you put it to see things you normally can't see? That's the fly on the wall question.
Right. Unless the security camera triggers a whole other level of things.
Oh, an invisible security camera.
Ah, okay. Anyway, so, well, it's 4 o'clock.
We covered a lot of ground again.
What's that?
We covered a lot of ground again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you the last word, Jerry. What, anything else you'd like to say about this topic, or ask any questions or anything?
No, I think I'm definitely going to dig into some of those question strategies you mentioned. We hope to do a practice run sometime in December or January, and then launch a more aggressive effort. There's something in the United States called the Rotary Club.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know them?
Yeah.
They have 33,000 clubs, and their avowed goal for the year is to address climate change on a community level.
Wow.
Mm. So we are hoping that if we can, and we have contacts with several of them, so we're going to pilot a strategy for, you know, facilitating these community discussions. And gee, we might only get 10% of the 33,000. Huh. So we could be looking at a few thousand groups that are looking for some strategy for having better conversations.
Yeah.